With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, Mark from the Guitar Nerds podcast here, and this week you have got a special treat. We have not done any listener questions for a while, so this whole episode is dedicated to listener questions, and that also carries on into the Patreon episode. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At $1 a month, you get the regular episode ad-free and early, so you wouldn't even be hearing this. At $5 a month, you get access to an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, plus access to all of the old episodes that we've recorded, and you get the mini-series like Joe Branton's Rant On and Gear of Yesteryear. You also get access to the interviews that Matt Knight does with pedal builders from around the world. This week on the Patreon episode, like I said, we carry on with all the questions that we've been sent in. We answer questions from Harry about bit crushers, Evan about his broken amp, Andrew about Tone City pedals, and Corey about attenuators. Patreon.com/guitar nerds for an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every single week. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Willkommen.
Jay Cross.
Guten Tag.
And Joe Branton.
Achtung.
Good, good. Very good. All the colours of the rainbow. It's very hot. We're actually recording on Sunday. We normally record on Mondays.
It's super hot.
I would say Sundays are the new Mondays.
Well, we do seem to always be recording on Sunday.
Tell me why.
Sweet little lies.
Sweet child of mine.
This is definitely the lowest quality a podcast has ever been.
Yeah, it's a bad start. A bad start. Thanks for tuning in. If you are to your regular home for guitar news and entertainment and fun, but there is no news this week because this week is a
question special.
We've been building up a bucket of questions over the last few weeks.
A literal bucket.
There's been so much news and so much stuff to talk about. What with the like Milan trip last week, then we had the new Boss stuff, then we had the Boss MS3, and there's been all sorts of things that have eaten into most of the podcast.
And next week is Summer NAMM.
I'm
so excited about Summer NAMM.
I am indeed.
I know most of the new things.
Well, you're not going to be able to mention them in this week's Patreon episode.
I'm embargoed for most of them.
We talk about our Summer NAMM wish list / predictions.
Matt, what would happen to me if I said some of the stuff that you've embargoed me on?
I don't think I've embargoed you on anything, have I?
Oh. Can we permanently embargo you just on every topic?
Can we just embargo you?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want your listenership to go down to zero, I imagine so.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So, first, let's just have a quick catch up. Everyone, Matt, you've been away for a couple of weeks. Did you get up to any guitar-related stuff while you were away?
No. I was in a remote town of only 1,000 people in eastern Sicily, where I think me and Amy, my partner, were the only English people there. It was absolutely amazing. And it, the village that you could see in the hill in the background was where they shot the Godfather trilogy. All the scenes in Sicily were shot there. So that was pretty amazing. And swam in the sea and saw lots of fish.
What, and there wasn't a single guitar shop?
There was definitely not a single guitar shop anywhere that I went.
So basically,
how are you not dead? Like, I'd imagine that you would just shrivel up and die without hearing a shimmer reverb for 2 weeks.
Was so refreshing to not actually think about or play guitar for that whole time, and then come back and then be like, It's just sometimes it pays to just have a break from it, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Whilst we're not suggesting at all to listeners that they take a break from listening to stuff about guitars,
have a break.
Well, I mean,
if anyone from guitar, or who else is a bit international? Gear for Music is listening. It sounds like there's a gap in the market.
Oh, GAC could open up.
GAC Sicily.
GAC Sicily is a great idea, actually.
Sicily. You could head over there. I think people would really be into you selling guitars in Sicily. Mainly us.
Yeah.
I'd be really into you not being here.
You know that he's not allowed to in any other country anymore.
Oh, did they rip up your passport?
No, it was just stuff that happened in Italy, specifically.
Yeah, it's when we went to Milan, there was a lot of things that happened that meant Joe should never go back there again.
Gotcha.
not even by law, just the locals. They all know him. And right. His face is a wanted man.
It's a built-up town. I didn't know that they could even find that many rocks to throw in such a short space of time.
Chasing him out of town. J Cross, how have you been?
I'm about to sneeze, so I might disappear in a sec.
Joe Branton, how have you been?
Oh, yeah, really good, actually.
So the Polymath album reached its funding total with help of some Guitar Nerds listeners.
Oh, yeah,
so
thanks very much, Mark Pack. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, we made it by the skin of our teeth.
You did. 2% pushed you over the edge.
Yeah, pretty much was. Yeah, it was. That was good. But yeah, so we made it, which is great because it now means we can make this ludicrous Leviathan of a record. So that's grand. And then today at 6:36 this morning, our guitarist had his first baby, Evelyn.
In the last few weeks, which one has he spent the most time, had the most time invested in? His upcoming baby or his upcoming album?
Well, on the due date, we were playing a gig at the Boston Music Rooms in London. So he had to drive up separately and was like on the phone checking how she was just before we played. Then we played the set and he got in his car. He came off stage, got in his car and went. And we backed down.
Just turn the gig down.
Well, Boston Music Room is a great venue. Have you ever been there?
I have. It's like played there a few times.
Yeah, really nice venue. And we were supporting the Algorithm, who were this crazy like tech metal two piece, like a 7-string guitar and an incredible drummer. We were supporting them, and it was like a sold out show. So we thought we ought to do it. It was actually his idea to do it, but one of the hottest gigs I've ever played. It was unbelievable. Do you know how many times I tuned the Stonefield? Zero during the set. Probably the hottest show I've ever played.
It's almost like it's as good as a P bass.
You would definitely have to tune a P bass.
Definitely not.
But it was, that was really good. So yeah, we played a show, and then he had his kid this morning. We've got Evelyn a Polymath baby grow.
I'm surprised the kid's not called Polymath.
Oh, I was really rooting for Joe.
Molly.
Molly Path.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good. But yeah, we're definitely going to do...
What's Tim's last name?
Lorlick Walters. He's double-barreled it with his wife. But,
it's hard to make a joke out of that name, isn't it? It's quite complicated.
Yeah, Evelyn Lorlick Walters. But yeah, we're going to, one of the best films in the world, Three Men and a Little Lady, obviously. Three Men and a Little Baby, also good. But we're going to have the next Polymath photo shoot is going to be a copy of the of the Three Men and a Baby cover shoot.
Yeah, me and Mark and I did that with our friend when he had a baby.
Yeah, we've beaten you to it. Sorry,
oh,
JB.
Soz.
Oh. I wonder where Joe gets all his ideas from.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Weird. J Cross, now that you've finished sneezing,
yes.
good week or couple weeks?
Yes, it's been good. It's been very busy. I've put on a couple of shows.
And pounds.
I thought that's what he was going to say. Then
put on a couple of pounds.
Thanks, mate. I put on a couple of gigs. I put on my mates from Houston, Texas, football, etc.
I was so gutted. Yeah. I couldn't go and see that. How was it?
It was great. It was great. And Mercy is still rocking the Shell Pink Basics,
that's
which is
so cool.
One of my favorite, one of my favorite instruments in the entire world.
I think that must be kind of like hands down my favorite like stage instrument. You know, there are like certain bands who play guitars that you're like really into. I think that might be my favourite one. Yeah. I've never seen it live.
It was fantastic. And great band. That was on the 4th of July.
Amazing.
So I took down an American flag and some balloons and stuff. And yeah, it was a great night. Very, very fun. Yeah, other than that, things have been good. Busy. I can't really think about what else has been going on. Don't know.
Well,
I nearly bought another Tape Echo this
really?
Week.
Which one?
Another Watkins. I found a solid state Watkins.
That's so ridiculous.
For not very much money.
A solid state Watkins?
Yeah.
I didn't know they even made
Tape
Echoes.
when it was solid state? Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. And it's I've seen one for...
How much was it?
Cheap enough. Cheap enough, and apparently all in working order. Too cheap for what it is, I think. But I don't get paid till next week, so okay. I might. But then
I mean,
again,
I have like $4,000 in my account from some pledge thing I did. So
yeah. So yeah, whether I need a third tape echo, I'm not sure. But yeah, I guess we'll see.
That's cool.
So
man.
I might get that.
Oh,
I wonder,
you should.
Is it? Can you hook multiple
together?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
It's just like putting a delay pedal into another delay pedal.
What I want to do is hook them up so that they avoid the arrays head.
So it's just constantly recording.
Well, but no, I mean, maybe they avoid one arrays head, so there's two.
So
units.
One of them's acting as a delay, and the other one is the actual recording.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, that's what Frippertronics is. Yeah. Effectively. It's just you're just extending the length of the tape.
Yeah.
You'd actually be better out doing that out of your Roland one because it's got a much wider tape in
honestly.
It.
Honestly, always working.
Of course, yeah, always working.
What you could do, mate, is just get like a loop pedal, just throwing it out there.
Yeah,
or just use the Roland you've already got. It's got sound on sound mode.
Well, speaking of this sort of thing, I've been spending a lot of time this week with the new Boss 500 series bits and bobs.
Yep.
With the RV500.
Yes. Which, I watched. Speaking of that, I watched your video.
Oh yeah,
that you did for GAC the other day.
Oh yeah, and me playing guitar.
It was.
I recommend everyone go and watch
it. It was great, but it's very obvious that you're not a guitar player.
Oh, is it? Oh god, because, damn it!
No,
I was
and I don't
hoping
mean,
that I'd got away with.
No,
that.
But I don't
what,
mean that.
What,
in a, I don't mean
really
that. In, a,
like in
a,
guitar demos is just hearing one chord. I really like that.
I played several chords,
but it's
no,
just
not. But not. One after each other. It was, here's one chord, then we'll just hear the reverbs and delays for a minute or so.
But also, what you've done is you've taken a really intense sound on the Mobius. Sorry, yeah. Not the Mobius. The,
easy.
on the MD. And then you've taken a really intense sound on the Big Sky. Sorry, Matt. Sorry, the RV 500. Sorry. And, you can't tell what's going on.
I know, that's the whole idea.
Both mental sounds.
Well, that's the whole idea. I can't really play guitar, so,
covering it up.
But I thought that was a good idea. Oh, I'm gutted.
No.
I kind of thought I got away with it.
I did think it was a great demo, because that's the sort of way that I play guitar.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic, but, you know, I think some people might actually want to hear some usable sounds of it.
Yeah, true. But I'm doing another video with Matt on Tuesday. He's coming down to GAC. So
someone who can actually play guitar.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But also someone who knows how to use the pedals. But Matt sent me like a crib sheet for it just before I actually shot the demo. And I sort of read a bit about it and worked out a little bit about it before I shot it. But and I'm sure Matt's probably mentioned it in podcasts and I've just not listened. But the... I would buy it just for the fact that you have the space echo on there and you can change the tape heads.
Yeah, yeah.
In the options. That's absolutely
amazing.
I haven't
mentioned anything about it because they came out when I was on holiday.
They did, yeah.
No, they came out just before I went on holiday, so I missed the two podcasts afterwards. Which I thought was quite good because then that just let you say whatever you want about it without my bias.
And did you listen to those podcasts?
Absolutely not.
Of course. we got away with it, guys. We got away with it.
I would. I mean, I think shimmer is one of the most overrated sounds. Like, it, and I can't make it sound good. I think that's why I think it's overrated. But the space echo on the RV just makes it worth it. Anyway, like despite of everything else that pedal does.
So essentially what you're saying is people don't need to buy that. All they need to do is go back and buy the pedal that I've been championing for
the last because it does
10 years.
More. It does more than the Space Echo. And so just for that, it's worth it. But then it has a hunk of other stuff as well. And then the MD500 has the Dimension on it. But it also has the slicer on it. And then there's a whole slicer on it. So I'm kind of like, well, I don't know. Boss have kind of done themselves out of the slicer.
Oh, well, I was going to ask Matt when he first put the post up. I was like, oh yeah, when are they going to do a SL500, the slicer? And then I saw that it was in the list and I was like, I won't write it.
But that would be amazing. But
yeah. I loved those two pedals together. I thought they were absolutely brilliant. Did you see the guitar I played?
You played a Gibson 175?
Yep, that's right. An EF 175.
And I'm really interested to know where, because I saw you've been harping on about this guitar a lot recently, and you were saying, "Oh, this is the best guitar I've ever played."
It's in my
since
office.
When have you since when have you been into big hollow body jazz guitars?
I used to own an Epiphone ES-175.
Did you?
Yeah, I actually did. Yeah, I don't play guitar, so I never really talk about it. Well, I sold it
clearly
like a few years
in that video.
Ago, yeah. God damn it! I was relatively happy with my guitar
it's
playing.
All right. Well, oh. while you've got no one else to do it, it's fine, boys. It's good to hear that you're all in good form, and we could obviously talk about the boss stuff in more detail. But I'm sure there's people. I know for a fact there's people screaming at the podcast. Two things. Shut up about Boss. You always talk about Boss. And Matt, I think we should maybe go into the two new pedals in further detail in a Patreon episode.
Yeah. At some point. We can also talk about the stuff that turned up on my desk, because I also had four new things turn up, plus some more stuff on the way. So
you should say what those are.
No, you can't yet, I don't think.
No,
I can.
No, not Boss things.
Oh, right, okay.
Not,
yeah.
Not Boss things.
Oh, well, let's talk about guitar other pedals.
Well,
stuff that me and Matt are going to do.
Let's do a quick rundown on those then before we dive into the questions, because that, I think, is interesting. Let's do that.
Yes.
As opposed to talking about Boss.
Number one, I got the Hudson Electronics Broadcast.
I saw that.
Preamp. Absolutely mind-blowing. I got all these. So the three pedals I got, I quickly plugged them in when I came home on Wednesday. It was the first evening I've been home, and I think I rush plug them all in. I was like, I'm not so sure. I was really disappointed, and I was like, oh, it's probably just because it was late. And then I plugged them in the other day and I was just like, it's just mind-blowing. As an always on pedal, it's the best I think I've ever heard.
What sort of thing is it? Is it super gainy, or is it
no, it's
like,
just
how is its voicing?
It's basically just a low gain preamp. But it's so interactive. The controls are so interactive, and it's got
there
a really
many
nice
controls,
low cut.
Are there?
No, just low cut, gain, and volume. But it's just really dynamically responsive, and rather than a clean boost, it sounds like a really warm console preamp, almost like a preamp that you get on a desk or something like that. Which I think is the sort of thing they're going for, and it runs on 9, 18, or 24. And I ran it on 9, and then someone in the Facebook group said, you should try running it on 18, and it sounded a million times better. That's the first time I've actually gone, I can actually hear a noticeable difference between, sometimes you get a little bit more headroom, and it sounds, but this is night and day. It sounds completely different.
What does what does the low cut control do? I don't really understand what that means.
What do you think?
Is it literally just cuts out the low end of the frequency?
Yeah, and it's a low filter, so it low filter, so it filters out all the low end. But it comes
as opposed to it being
the gain stage, not afterwards.
So it's
so
essentially
it's really responsive.
So it's essentially a treble boost,
yeah.
But instead of it literally boosting the treble, it's just taking away
the bass.
The bass.
Yeah, so you can actually, and there's a high gain mode, and if you crank it all the way and then turn the high or the low cut all the way up, you get that kind of helter-skelter sort of Beatles straight into the desk overloading the preamp sort of sound as well. It's just really cool. It works as a lo-fi fuzz box at the same time. But as an always-on preamp, just, absolutely mind-blowing. And one of those ones that works with so many different guitars. Sometimes you get one, it sounds really good to have humbuckers, it doesn't sound so good with single coils, or it's too bright for single coils or a telly. Yeah, it's just really intuitive, just sounds really nice. I got the Old Blood Noise Endeavors Fault, which is their new overdrive. Really unique sounding. I haven't spent as much time with that yet, but it's quite cool because it's an overdrive and then it's got a second gain stage that you can add on top.
Cool.
So it's not too overdrive.
You can make it fuzzy.
You can basically add a second gain stage into it. Which is quite cool, but I've only spent a few minutes of that. I haven't had time to properly kind of plug that in yet. JHS Pink Panther.
This
digital
looks
delay.
So good. Looks amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's basically a kind of.
What's the unlatching button on it?
Tap tempo. Oh. And it's great because it doesn't oscillate. And if you do move the delay time, it's really glitchy and really digital. It's not a digital delay that's meant to replicate analog delays or vintage delays. It's basically replicating old digital delays, in a sense. Or you can have them crystal clean, or you can kind of add in a bit of like darkness and roll off the tone a little bit. But it's a, basically a nod to the old DD5 and the Ibanez DE7.
Nice.
That that pedal is super topical at the moment.
Seems everyone, to be,
everyone's banging on about it.
Yeah.
That and the, I've just seen like one of the requests I've had the most bizarrely since working for Boss is bring back the DD5. Even Cedric from the Mars Volta was like, DD5, you should reissue that.
Yeah.
That's like the
he sent that. So, said that to you directly, right? Email.
He actually said it to Jay, the guy I work with, when he met him backstage at a gig, and he was like, "Oh yeah, your DD5, that's the one you should reissue."
Wow.
Bizarre. So yeah, but it's really nice. It's got a tape mode on it, which basically darkens off all the repeats. So yeah, it's just an incredible delay, and it's really nice to have the tap tempo on board on like a small sort of footprint. What else? Hudson Electronics are also sending us the Sidecar, which is their Tube Screamer style pedal, which is awesome. Meador Electronics from Australia are sending us their new fuzz pedal, which is also on the way. And I've got interviews lined up with Brian Wampler, Blake from Tone Mob, Meador Electronics, and a couple of other people as well.
Nice. Busy
so it's like
since you
got
back.
All happened in like the last, in the last like week since I've been back.
Nice.
Like all of that has just appeared on my desk.
Nice.
So, and as we mentioned in the podcast, the Facebook group today, I'm two away, or now one away, from the complete set of Dan Electro food pedals.
So we think we've got one of those two.
Oh, it's confirmed. The guy has paid for it, and it is on its way.
Nice. So what are we looking for? So that was the Surf and Turf, right? So
that's Surf and Turf.
That's the compressor, right? The Leslie compressor.
No.
The Rocky Road.
That's what we need. The Rocky Road is the Leslie simulator.
The Rocky Road Leslie Simulator. If we get that, then we'll have the entire collection.
So calling all guitar nerds.
Indeed. Yeah, if you know anyone who's got the Rocky Road, or you've got one lurking in a box somewhere, get in touch. We are... I assume we can pay some money for it, right, Matt?
We're not over the odds.
We're not paying over the odds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, guitar nods do not want to pay
guitar
over
nods.
The odds.
Guitar nods.
Guitar nods. But we're filming on the 23rd of July,
the
so
Sunday.
Ideally it'd be great if we had it before then.
Yes.
Also, it'd be a shame to kind of try and film it and then be like, oh, we're still missing one.
Yeah definitely. If we can get that before 23rd of July, that would be excellent. So if you see one for sale, or you know anyone who's got one who doesn't use it, put us in touch. J. Cross, how good would you say you are at the guitar?
I would say
Your three choices are beginner,
yes,
intermediate,
yes,
or advanced.
Probably beginner.
Okay, excellent. How would you like to move up to intermediate?
I'd really like to be an intermediate guitar player. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to be.
Good. That's about as far as you'll get.
Yes.
Unless you use Guitar Tricks.
Okay, tell me more.
Guitar Tricks is an excellent website to teach you how to move from beginner to intermediate to advanced guitar.
Okay.
Whether you're just starting out, or whether, you know, you should be better than you are.
Like me.
Indeed.
Yes.
Guitar Tricks will help you move through those stages as a guitar player. And good for you, J. Cross. We have worked together with Guitar Tricks to bring a 14-day free trial to not only you, but to the listeners of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
So that means I can try it for 14 days, and if I'm not into it, just cancel it.
You can, indeed.
But I'm probably going to be into it.
I think you probably will.
Okay.
You'll notice a swift advancement of your guitar skills.
Excellent.
So do you want to know where you can get this offer?
Where can you get the offer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Can you repeat that for me?
I can. GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Is there like an app that you can use, or do you have to do it on your computer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks. Lads, it's great to hear you in good form, because we promised that we were going to dive into a whole big old bucket, a swimming pool, maybe not a swimming pool, a large child's paddling pool worth of...
No.
Oh, no. Whoa.
Sorry, you're back. You do it, don't you?
You've ruined it.
I would like to point out at this impasse that Matt Knight is wearing like a towel around his neck.
I love this. I was looking at that and I was like, should I mention it?
No, I'm going to mention it. Matt Knight's got a towel around his neck. Listeners, you can't see, but it's weird. He's like Barry
White.
It's
nearly over 30 degrees in here. I've got no air conditioning.
So you thought you'd wear more clothes?
No, it's just to basically wipe the sweat away. I am literally pouring with sweat.
Just take your shirt off, mate. We don't mind. We're all
mates. I'm not going to take my shirt off or on camera. That will just make it very weird.
We're all mates here. Yeah.
None of us are wearing trousers.
Yeah, yeah. You just can't
see. I'm not wearing trousers. Shorts or pants.
This podcast just took a really downward spiral.
Matt, if anyone is familiar with current WWE superstar Samoa Joe, Matt has got that kind of look at the moment. The bruiser with the towel around his neck. He's ready to go to war. A big old one fall match with a whole big bucket of
news.
Question.
Oh, sorry.
That was like two wrestlers, like,
yes, indeed,
entering the ring.
Indeed. News versus Mr. questions. News and questions.
Anyway,
one, two, three. Your new winner is questions. First up, Lee says, "What's the best way?" Lee says, "What's the best way to achieve a melodic death metal tone? I've tried medium gain with a clean boost, but it's a little too clean. Any ideas?"
That's such a weird question.
Melodic death metal. I don't know what that is. Matt Knight.
I'm glad you included this one then.
Well, I thought we could talk about it.
It's like metal, but more about death with melody. I'm trying to think of some bands that you might actually know that would be maybe classed as, like, maybe they're probably not heavy enough, but maybe Opeth, like earlier Opeth.
Okay, like poppy, because
no, it's not poppy.
Okay. I don't mean poppy,
metal, there's loads of melodic.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
It's not
poppy.
Just like loads of low end.
So I think the solution is actually, whilst he maybe thinks that's too clean as it is, I kind of think the idea for that sort of thing is to really overdo the reverb. I think that's the or the digital delay, one of the
loads,
two.
Loads of shimmer.
Yeah, well, not shimmer, but like just like a simple reverb or like a really background digital delay is kind of the answer to the sort of melodic side of metal. Because what you want, you actually do want that clean sound. And I think when he says it sounds too clean, it's just cutting off too sharply. I kind of think the solution there is to drown it out in one of the two things, like either a sort of light digital delay or a really over-the-top reverb.
I looked into a couple of pedal boards from a few different bands and had a listen to a few different bits, and the amp of choice for most of them, well, now tends to be Axe FX, but most of them are modeling like a Masabugi, Jewel Wreck. So there was two choices that kind of jumped out at me for like a distortion that would work really well, that's got a lot of tone shaping options. Seymour Duncan,
Palladium.
Oh,
how about that?
Which we reviewed, which was a really, really good bit of kit. And the Mesa Boogie Throttle Box.
Those boogie pedals, they were really, really cool.
Yeah, and but no one bought them.
They didn't. I think they were just too much money.
How much were they?
They were £250, I think.
Well, this one, the Throttle Box, had they did one with the 5-band EQ, and it was nearly £300, I think.
Yeah, because they brought out 4, I think, at one point.
They were like double pedals, weren't they?
Yeah, and they didn't... Yeah. I don't think they did a great job of differentiating them quite so much. So people would come in and they'd say, oh, I want to try the new Mesa Boogie pedals. You know, what's the difference? And even I was quite often struggling to say, but I do remember that the Throttle Box was a really, really cool, very, very, it brought out that boogie sound really well. And I think one of the things that you really want for this style of metal is you want it to keep it really, really tight. So, you know, as much as I'm not a huge fan of compressors in general, I think that's what you want for this sort of music, is keep it together, keep it tight.
Yeah, you don't want any picking dynamic, basically, do you? You want all this, like, loads of really smooth lines, so like a compressor would work really well. Maybe one with like a clean blend, like the Pulp and Peel. You can blend in a bit of the clean sound as well.
Yeah, definitely. Someone we used to work with actually was once talking about like a sound that is too clean. The best way to sort it out is a mix of both those things, actually. A little bit of compression and a tiny bit of like almost like slapback digital delay will really fill out a sound if you think like this is too clean, basically. But yeah, definitely a Boogie, you know, emulate pedal, or if you can obviously get a Boogie yourself, because it's got all that cut to it, but you still get all the gain there. It's kind of, that's why those amps became known in the late 90s, early 2000s for the sort of sounds that they did, you know, the new metal type tones. It's because people still wanted melody, and they, you know, they still wanted to be able to, they didn't want to completely obliterate the sound, but they wanted loads of gain, and that's, you know, what Boogie does very, very well. Let's do, David says, best amp under $200 all round. Doesn't matter, solid state, tube, digital.
Well, I don't think you have much of a choice for $200, do you?
Well, what does $200 work out? Jay, you're usually good at...
180 quid?
180 quid, yeah, at the moment.
Yeah. Okay, so...
That's depressing.
£180. What would you spend it on? Let's go around the room. Joe Branton.
Well, for £180, you're looking at a practice amp, so...
Yep.
Well, it's best practice amp. Practice amps are irrelevant. I mean, I'd sooner spend that money on software. How much is Positive Grid?
Well, you've got to have a computer and an interface at that point as well.
Okay, fine.
Can you get that for £180?
No, I mean, I think we're all going to say the same thing, because the only practice amp that's managed to get under the £200 threshold is
the Fender Mustang GT.
Yeah, right.
Is it
under £200?
Right. Oh, okay. So what we are, we are in Jay versus Matt territory, because we are going to be looking at those two, the Mustang and the Boss, which is kind of like Fender are going to be offering us the, which is maybe why I'm the only one who should answer here. But
what about me?
The Fender, oh, and you, yeah. But you asked the question.
Well, the new Stag practice amp comes out now. Oh, sorry, I'm breaking that embargo.
But you've got Fender, who are offering kind of all singing, all dancing, like loads of effects. Fender have done a great job of getting like Nick Reinhardt on board to really demonstrate how much that amplifier can do. But Fender are going down a super, super digital line. So kind of a similar thing to, I guess, what Line 6 were doing in their early days. They're trying to give you everything, and then you need to learn how to use that amp in order to get the best out of it. Like Nick Reinhardt was a great example, because he's such a gear nerd that he learned.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How to use the amp, and I think that's maybe the only negative thing I think about the GT is I imagine you really have to understand what that amp does to get the most out of it. That's not a bad thing. Like, learning how to use your equipment isn't something we should frown upon, but I think you do have to learn how to use a Mustang GT, whereas Boss at the other end offered the Simpleton's amp in that it's super simple. There's not a lot on it, but what is there sounds good. So I think those are kind of your two choices.
Yeah, but I think that's always been the case. If you're looking at spending, you know, this sort of money, and you know, 200 quid isn't a small amount of money. It's still an investment for most people. When you're looking at that sort of thing, when you're looking at a practice amp, I think it's always been the case that the most recent products tend to be the best. You know, I mean, think about when the Blackstar amps came out, I don't think anything was able to touch them. And then similar when Orange released theirs, you know, they were absolutely fantastic.
But yeah.
Even going back to when the original Cube series, Cube came out. Whenever someone new, it's very rare, I think, that a company will bring out an amp and it doesn't have a few features on there. Because, you know, you think about the big amp companies at the moment. You've got Fender, Roland, Line 6, Orange, Blackstar, Marshall, I guess, almost always, whenever we've answered this question, the answer tends to be
the newest thing. You're absolutely, I think you're almost right, but actually, like today, I walked out my front door and there was a fete going on. There was an art fair on Brunswick Square in Brighton. And There was a little jazz band playing, and every single one of them had a street cube.
Yeah.
Like the bass player, two guitarists, and a vocalist going through all their own Roland street cubes.
Yeah.
Those things are, what, 6 years old, 7 years old, maybe?
I'll tell you what was so good about them is that battery amps were notoriously hard to do, and the only one that people... Pig Nose a bit, but the one that people used to buy was the crates.
A nightmare. Oh, yeah. Crate Taxi and Crate Limo.
Crate Taxi.
And the power supplies always used to break and you couldn't get replacement power
and fire. Supplies. So the problem with those was that they had internal batteries, and if you left them and didn't play them for a year... the battery would basically die. Like, you have to charge them up and then discharge them over time. So think about an amp that you use outdoors a lot in Britain.
Yeah.
You go, when do you start busking? Maybe like May
and then maybe April.
When do you stop busking? Like October, maybe? And then you're not going to use it until May again.
Yeah.
So the problem was that, you know, these amps are brilliant if you live in California and you're busking every day for a whole year. But as soon as you bring it into Britain, where you can't, you know, charge it up every day, discharge it as you're playing, charge it up again, it's just going to break because you leave it dormant in the cupboard.
Yeah.
Whereas what Roland did was, they're Roland, aren't they? Not Boss, the Street Cube. What Roland did was made something that you can use just with like D cell batteries, or no, they're like double A's.
Double A's.
And just made the took a product that people clearly wanted with the crates, and just kind of Rolandified it a bit, like made it really easy to use, put a bit more thought into like what's actually going to be useful in all the territories worldwide. You know, everyone can get hold of AA batteries, and if you leave it with the AA batteries in there for a year, nothing particularly bad is going to happen.
No, and I think that's a very strange. I think it's very strange that nobody has really tried to take on the mantle of the Street Cube. Sorry, I don't mean to make this Roland versus Fender again, but the only other thing out there, I think, is the Passport Mini.
Yeah. Fender amp can.
Well, okay. But I just don't think there's anything else out there that will do it. And I think it's mad that, you know, someone like Orange or Marshall, you know, the fact that Marshall haven't done a code busker, you know, even just calling it something like that.
Just that they spent 10 years making an amp that everyone else had already made.
Well, completely.
I think that's the thing, though. It's quite easy to make a battery-powered amp with tons of options, and it will just drain the battery too quick, where actually the Street Cube is really...
Well, like,
it lasts
hours of battery
so much
life
longer
or something,
on batteries. And it was funny, last time I was in Brighton, I was with Yoshikigami and... Kosuke, who actually was the lead engineer on the Street Cube, and walked past and watched someone busk with a Street Cube.
Oh, that's
and we
cool,
were just saying how funny it would be if the guy knew that the person standing in front of him was the guy that actually invented the amplifier.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. So to come back to the original question,
apparently last year... Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry, Matt, you cut out there. Finish your story.
Oh, sorry, don't I? It was a similar thing to this. Apparently last year when the Japanese guys came over, someone bought an RC300 and the engineer on the looper was there, and then the guy bought the RC300 and he was like, oh, this guy designed it, and he was like, oh, can you sign this box for me? So he got his like RC300 signed by the guy that designed it. But it's just, you know, you'd never think to meet the people that end up building these products.
Yeah. So to go back to the original question, you've got £180. What are you buying, Joe Branton?
I think we should speak about the new Line 6 Spiders as well, because I think they are great. The problem is, I think that they called them spiders, and I think the last series of spiders stuck around for too long, and they lost the thing where they were progressive and became digital
old tech.
They became old tech. They just kept them on for too long, and so by keeping the next series as the spider, I think it's a bit of a trick, because too many people, I think, have gone, oh, the spiders, that's old tech.
Like, completely.
If they'd have called them something else, if they'd called them the arachnid, like, people would be fine.
I think people would be like,
I'm surprised that they haven't, you know, sort of ported the... And I know that they're trying to keep it as a premium product, but I'm surprised that they haven't ported the Helix name onto a, you know, a smaller...
Yeah, Helix Junior.
Well,
Helix,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, all of the... for all of the heavy hitting that the Line 6 Spider gets, people have taken the Helix and even Amplify... you know, the previous incantation of their it was kind of something separate.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was a weird product. I guess it was a practice amp that had kind of like
home use.
Yeah, what they call quality of life stuff about it. Like, it was easy to hook up to a TV or easy to hook up to Spotify.
But what I mean is, when those products came out, I really thought that everyone would just dismiss them as, oh, it's Line 6. Line 6 make the Spider, and the Spider is crap. And I thought that would happen, but it hasn't happened. And I think, you know, that's great for the Helix, but I'm not sure that the Spider will be able to... I can't believe they've not rebranded it.
Yeah, it's a shame they haven't. It's interesting to see, and one thing I think the Boss Katana has done well is Boss Katana are the only brand that have gone, hey, how about we don't make our amp look exactly the same as everyone else's, whereas Mustang, Code, and the Line 6 Spider are almost interchangeable. Like, it's almost like a badge change between the three amps. Like, they've gone for the same grill and the same look, and the Katana's the only one that's tried something different, admittedly subtly different. But I kind of almost think, like, Orange should get in on some of this, because, like, someone who just try and make their amps look a bit different.
They did. I mean, the Orange Crush Pro series. Yeah. But we did some demos of them with Mikey from Skindred.
Oh, yeah, they were banging.
And they did do them, and they do look different, you know. But I don't know.
I think the problem is with those is that at the practice amp level, I think people are actually looking for, you know, digital modelling. They want different sounds from the amp. And I think, to be honest, the Katana's got it nailed for me. I just think it sounds so good.
Well, I don't know. Are people looking for digital modelling? Like, yeah, that's exactly why I would go Katana over Mustang or Spider, because I've got boxes of effects pedals at home, so I want to try them out. So,
you know...
Oh, no, I know. I think, in general, will want the
best bang for their buck.
And I think a Mustang is that answer. But I think, like, people like me, like, players still
nobody
have to play
likes
it.
You mate
people who play and collect gear and are into that sort of thing still have to play at home. They still need something small to do.
Yeah, sure.
And so for that, a Katana is great.
The real world feedback that obviously I get in my day job is actually more people are buying Katana to gig with than they are to use as a home practice amp.
Wow, okay.
Because it's a real Class A B amp, it's not Class D. Everything like Mustang, Orange, Code, they're all Class D. Katana's Class AB, so it's the same as a valve amp. Basically, a lot of valve amps are all Class AB.
He's just a walking
so you can actually turn it up to full. You can actually turn it up full volume, and it's giggable. So we're getting loads of requests from people going, "I bought the 50, but I've gone up to the 100 because I actually wanted even more power for gigs." But most people seem to be gigging it, which is one thing we didn't necessarily kind of thing to start with.
How much is a PV Bandit these days? Is it more than £160?
Can you still buy them new? Or
yeah, they still make PV them. Bandit. I'm sure they do.
They're probably not as good as classic ones. Get a second hand one.
What you want is the one with the blue trim and the silver logo. That's the ultimate PV Bandit. Let's move on, because we've spent a lot of time on this, but I think the feeling is that it's probably either the Boss Katana, surprisingly, or the Fender Mustang GT, surprisingly.
Oh, good.
But
as a
fairly impartial person, I do think they're both good amps. For me, the Katana does swing it. I'm sorry, Jay.
No. Remember whose house you're in, mate.
But if you want all the multi effects and stuff, then obviously you've got the Katana in there.
For me,
Mustang GT.
For me, well, from my perspective, GAC stock both of them. So, you know, whichever one's got the most margin.
Just which of your mates do you like? Which one of your mates do you like more? That's the key thing. Let's move on. So Steve says, I'm an older player who used to use about 6 pedals at gigs, but over time I've become a guitar, chord, amp, or DAW guy. Reverb for me has always been that knob on the amp that I hardly ever touch unless we're playing surf instrumentals. So what's all the fuss about reverb pedals? Convince me there's anything interesting about them. Joe Branton, I want you to tackle this first. As a man who we've just said has done a demo recently on some reverb pedals, and also probably the most contentious member of this group, how do you want to rebut Steve's he's saying basically what's the point of reverb?
Why would you use reverb? I mean, probably, Steve, for the same reason that you would call a jack cable a cable rather than a cord, I would imagine, but... just
such a bell.
I'm glad you amuse yourself, mate.
Yeah, whatever. I don't even know how to go about this. It's almost... Maybe if someone had said this about modulation, maybe if someone had said this about vibrato or chorus or something, I'd be like, yeah, this is a discussion to be had. But are you genuinely asking why someone would use the most used effect on any album of all time ever in history? Like, surely reverb is an absolute essential. I mean, he said it's a knob on an amp that he's never touched. I mean, I don't know, like, what the hell were you playing? Like, I mean, unless you're playing punk rock, I see no reason not to use a reverb control.
Or metal stuff, I guess. Like, things where you
need even metal.
Reverb live, though, don't you? You wouldn't want to necessarily have, like, maximum reverb on your amp live, because you might just drown out.
You're right, but I think a touch of reverb is in the right context, is an absolute... essential. I think reverb surely is
delay instead,
possibly, but I mean yeah, maybe he does. I mean, he says he used to use sort of six pedals and yeah, certainly I think reverb and delay are kind of interchangeable depending on your gig situation. Certainly if you're playing your local working man's club, I'm sure it doesn't make a difference, but
nothing wrong with that. What's wrong with the WMC, mate? What have you got against the old boys?
No, nothing at all.
Ageist.
But I genuinely don't know how to go about answering this. Reverb is an absolute essential, and I think there's so much it can do, especially with the way reverb's going, with things like the RV 500, and it's not even that, like, even things like the Hall of Fame, the TC Hall of Fame, I think was something that changed the sort of reverb thing for people, because it was such an amazing sounding pedal. But you know, the introduction of Shimmer, it's not for me, but that sound defined like whole genres. Like, it changed post rock forever. Like, where would Godspeed You Black Emperor be without reverb pedals?
I do think this speaks to a larger problem that I have with sometimes the things that we talk about, but also sometimes kind of guitar enthusiasts, or mainly pedal enthusiasts on the internet as a whole, is that with effects, we're taking everything like as out there as it can go a lot of the time. So things like reverb, yeah, it's brilliant that Boss have got the RV500, but I think a lot of the ways that people are going to show it off is like basically the demo that you did, which is just, here's all the ridiculous sounds it will do.
I mean, that's not a good example. I was using that as a weird
thing.
Sure,
but a lot of people will do that. And, you know, we've seen rise of channels like Knobs, for example, which I really like. But for most players, they're never going to buy that pedal because it's not doing a sound that you're going to use. Which is why if someone said to me, like, okay, you can only ever take one pedal with you again, you've got a low-powered valve amp or a small valve amp that will cover a bit of your drive stuff, the pedal I would take with me is the Strymon Flint, because it's a really simple reverb, and a lot of the time that's what most people will need.
Of all the gear that I have, the reverb pedal that stayed on my board more than any other was a Hall of Fame Mini.
Yeah,
because it was simple, it had one control and everything else was preset. And yeah, I agree, like, reverb should be used as a touch. Like, I understand, I'm saying that, like, you know, genres have been built on the weird sounds, but I still think a subtle reverb sounds gorgeous on a guitar or a bass, and I think it's nothing but it's such an improvement on everything.
Yeah,
crazy not to use it.
Matt, any thoughts?
A classic for me, actually, revisiting a pedal that I hadn't plugged in for a while, the original Big Box Holy Grail from Electro Harmonix.
Great pedal,
because it was just a great sounding amp reverb, basically, just a great sounding spring reverb. I mean, it had the Flurb in there. I think the other one was either Hall or Plate, but the spring sound was just great. So I think, you know, if you had a really dry amp, for example, it's just nice to add in a bit of background. But I think you're right, though. The problem is now is some reverb pedals, you know, and obviously Boss have got the RV500, and there's a lot of others that make reverbs that have got hundreds of sounds on. But some people just want to plug in and get a great sound straight away. And I think that's where you're right with the Strymon Flint. It's just like, oh, here's a really nice reverb, really usable, but then also here's a really nice tremolo. And straight away, for me, that pedal's always been really musical.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's really inspiring every time you plug it in. And I think if he's trying to get into reverb, or he's not convinced and he kind of wants a pedal, if you spent the money on, say, like a Strymon Flint, I think straight away you'd instantly go, oh, I can write so much music around this, because it's just an inspiring pedal.
Well, it's just the the modulation section, I guess, of a AC30. You know, that's essentially, you know, it's the,
well,
it's
yes and no.
It's kind of like an amp in a box, but it's not the amp. It's the
other stuff.
The other stuff, you
exactly.
know.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's, you've got the things that people loved from AC30s, the things that people loved from you know, old Fender amps. You've got those in that box, and it isn't just. It, I think the Flint kind of stands alone as a pedal that's really bucked to the trend of being an amp in a box, because that's what it is. But you can use it with your own amp, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I love that pedal. I think
absolutely.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. So, Steve, I'm not sure we've convinced you to use reverb or not, but I would say don't listen to Joe Branton's rubbish music, which reverb is ridiculous and makes it sound... don't take that as the only example of reverb, I would say. Like, go and listen to more of the kind of strip-back pedals that are really basic. Mm. The other one I really like, Boss FRV1, which is the Fender Reverb emulator.
RV6, that was great.
Yeah, but again, it goes into the, you know, the slightly more
Shimmer,
kind of newer stuff. But definitely check out the Strymon Flint.
Yeah, it's... FRV1 and FDR1, actually, which was the Fender Deluxe Reverb. So if you've got like a Marshall and you kind of want a bit more of that Fendery kind of splashy sound...
To be honest, even if you just want to sort of dip your toes, like... Moore do the Shimverb, which despite its name actually does some really
I wasn't really into the Shimverb, but no? I really like the
Re-Echo?
The Skyverb, which was
nice.
It was the kind of their homage to the Big Sky, but in a really tiny controllable box. I thought that was really nice.
Tell you the other one to check out if you want something a lot more stripped back, and I've never heard one of these in the real life. I've only heard it on the internet. The J Rocket Designs Boing, which is their one knob spring reverb, but it's literally just, it's like an amp control. It's how much do you want? Turn it up and then you turn it on.
No voicing controls,
none of that, no shimmer, no reverb.
I kind of like that.
That's
why I used the Hall of Fame Mini, just because, you know, I could just control how much I had.
I mean, that's slightly different because, you know, if you wanted to, you could go in and change all of those parameters with the tone print.
I guess so.
But, I agree. I think pedals like that have only got the one control, or I quite like pedals that don't have any controls.
Yeah,
you know,
turn it on.
I think those are, because that's kind of sticking two fingers up at people like Joe Branton.
Yeah,
where, you know, you don't need all of these. Here's just a great sound.
Definitely. Let's move on. Let's do
Vince or Ben.
Well,
or
let's do Vince, because this one we've probably covered a few times before, but I like these ones where we have to pick an option from a list. So Vince has been asked a million times before, but I thought I'd ask again. Looking for a small home use Blues Junior style amp. Anyone got any recommendations? Mainly play clean and slightly overdriven. Contenders so far: Blues Junior 3, Blues Junior Tweed version, PV Classic 30, Vox AC15C1, or a Blues Cube. Where are we going? Joe Branton first.
Well, I will say that the Blues Junior, the Tweed version, that's super limited edition. It looks great. It's really high quality Tweed. It's not limited.
It's not limited edition.
Oh, is it the other amps that are limited in the Tweed series?
That one's not limited. The Blue Junior Tweed is a standard. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. In that case, there's no reason to buy it.
You're probably thinking it says
LTD.
I think it says LTD, which stands for lack of tweed. It doesn't stand for limited. I'm not quite sure how that one slipped in, but that's that slips a lot of people up in the office as well. Don't worry.
Okay, fine. I may have been marketing this as like a super limited edition amp.
They've been
limited edition for 10 years.
They've been
We've only just got them in stock.
No, you haven't.
Yeah, we have.
No, you're thinking of something
else.
All the
other Tweed stuff. They've released like four or five Tweed. I did a Tweed mail shot a week ago on all Fender Tweed stuff.
That's good.
Because they've got loads of new Tweed stuff. Anyway, obviously I'm going to say the Vox AC15 because they sound better than anything else. Like, and if we're going to sort of take it on that, if you're into sort of really thin, non-existent, clean... sort of paltry sounds. If you like the Kooks and that, sure, like get maybe the Fender. But if you want like an amp that sounds great, we're not even going to talk about the PV, but if you want an amp that sounds
great,
can do everything, then the Vox AC15. No, I like all the amps on here, but the Vox AC15 is probably the best amp ever made, so obviously we're going to go for that.
It's not even the best AC15 ever made, let alone the best amp.
No, true.
If you want a good AC15...
Hand wired.
It's so...
You know they've just released like a... You know, it's their 60th anniversary?
70th.
Is it 70th?
I think so, yeah. Pretty sure it's... 1947.
If you're sure it's 70th, then I genuinely do need to go now and change an awful lot of marketing that's about to come out. Because I'm sure it was 60.
1947 is when they started, which is 70 years. We might have a problem.
But anyway, they've released, I'm sure it's 60th anniversary for the AC30.
Maybe 1957? Oh, that God. Sounds about right, okay. Is when the AC30 might have been released.
I hope that's the case.
Maybe it's the anniversary of AC30s, not the anniversary of Vox.
Yeah, fine. So they've released a load of limited edition ACs in like a slightly different type of black Tolex, but they look great, like hand-wired, made in the UK. Really cool. Maybe you could get one of those.
Have they definitely been announced?
Yeah, because I definitely announced them already.
I used to have the, as I've talked about many times before, I used to have a hand-wired AC30.
Oh, yeah, you had
AC30.
One of the, what was yours? The Hessian finish.
Yeah, well, that's the hand-wired. The hand-wired ones were, they did two versions. Well, there was five, really. There was the AC4HW, which was a fantastic, very simple plug and play amp that just sounded amazing. Then there was an AC15 and an AC30, and in each of those they do a Greenback version and a Alnico Blues version, and those amps just completely blew me away. I ended up getting a good deal on Greenback AC30 hand wired, and I loved it, but I always had in the back of my mind that it wasn't the Alnico Blue one.
Did you prefer that to the Greenback?
Oh, completely. Well, it just drives at a lower volume, and I just thought they were really, really fantastic. But coming miles off topic here, all of those fantastic amps. I will say that, you know, if you go back 3 or 4 years and listen to us having this discussion back then, I will be all over the Blues Junior. But now, I'm all about the Supersonics. Really? I absolutely love the Supersonic. I think that there's, you've got, it's a bit more versatile, and there's, you've got that drive section, and I think it's the best Fender drive amp out there. I absolutely love it. So that would be, but I mean, that's probably twice the price of a Blues Junior. So, a bit difficult.
We actually haven't mentioned yet, and it would be good for us to mention it before it gets around to Matt, but the Blues Cube. The Blues Cube is brilliant. Now, Vince has only put Blues Cube in his options, and obviously there are a few different options.
There's a new one as well. Talking about AC.
There is. Yeah, what's that? The Blues Junior. Is it British? They're calling it
Blues Cube Hot EL84 Modified.
Right, which is
British.
Kind of
or the Blues Cube Hot British.
Well, I would say the Blues Cube. Sorry, go on.
So I was going to say, basically a modified or retuned version of the Blues Cube Hot to match kind of the tone of EL84.
So a Vox.
Yes, it's a bit brighter. It's got a little bit more of that kind of toppy gain that you get from Voxes. But the thing I like about it is it gives you more drive than all the other options. So if you kind of want a bit more gain than a Blues Junior or an AC15 is probably going to give you, even though he says you play main clean, if you want that extra drive option, you have got that, and you've got the attenuation option as well. So I suppose that's the kind of maybe advantage of using it at home more.
I couldn't sing Blues Cube praises enough, especially the Hot.
I love every single one of those amps on that list.
Difficult.
The PV as well.
Head rush.
The PV Classic. The Classic range.
I was going to sing the praises off the PV Classic 30 because I was looking at the gear list for a rehearsal room that I had my first band practice in 2001, and they still have the Classic 50 that I plugged into in September 2001. That is still, despite being used every night...
I mean, it's probably been serviced, man.
Well, it's probably been serviced, but still, amps do fall apart. You know, even if you get something serviced, there's a lot of Fender and Vox amps and Marshall amps and Orange amps that haven't made it in people's houses for that long, even with a service. This has been used in a rehearsal.
It might not be the same one.
I reckon it is still the same one. Because it's the classic 50-410, which they just had when they opened.
Yeah.
And you're not going to buy another classic 50-410, are you? You just get something else.
Was it the Delta Blues was the 115, right?
No, the Delta Blues was, there was a 115 and a 410 as well.
Yeah,
right? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the coolest one. Yeah, yeah. 115 guitar
but
amp.
The classic 30, I can't sing the praises of highly enough. If you want something that is... that can be Fendery, but it's got a little bit more bite to it. I think the drive sound on there is better than a Blues Junior. I think it just tips into the right side of kind of breaking up, whereas I think the Blues Junior can get a little bit fizzy at times. The only problem is it is super loud, as with any of these amps, basically. Probably except the Blues Cube. If you want something that you can use at home as well, the Blues Cube is probably the best option. Everything else is going to be too loud, really. They're all kind of gigging or studio amps.
Guys, look how far we've come. We just asked about Blues Juniors.
I know,
we didn't. Do
I mean, just say case closed.
Yeah. I sort of think at one time everyone should own a Blues Junior just to experience how good they actually are. But in this question, you know, with this list, I mean, a classic 30 is quite a lot louder. So, you know, it depends on the application, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
And if you need something that you're going to use at home, then probably the Blues Cube is the best option. If you want something for small gigs where you can't, you know, take something, and, you know, classic 30, I guess, is a bit bigger and a little bit heavier than a Blues Junior. So all of these have got merits. Personally, for me, I'm saying classic 30. With that, we've answered a few questions, but we're basically at the end of the podcast. Do you think we were going to do some kind of summer NAMM predictions and stuff, but I think because we promised we're going to do a lot of questions, we should roll the rest of these questions over into the Patreon episode, because we have got a lot of questions. Let's do them over there. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Where from as little as... Wait, I've completely forgotten what I was going to say.
A dollar.
From as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. For $1, you get the regular pod ad-free and early. At the $5 a month tier, you get an extra half an hour, which is what we're going to record now, every week. Plus, you also get access to the mini-series that Joe Branton's rant on, all the interviews that Matt talked about earlier in the podcast, and one that I'm going to do with the head... the lead guy, the owner, the originator of Line 6, which I'm really looking forward to. Plus, you get access to all the previous content. So we've got something like 117 episodes. Too much, if anything. And you get a lot of stuff. And at the $10 tier, you get your name read out like these fine people.
Donald Chris, Chris Connor, Sandra Joy, Steve Mantel, Blair, Tom Scholars, Mantel, Andrew Macro, Jerry Schrott, Andrew McKenzie, Bella Pitt, Paul Corrigan, Jack Crawford, Will Chris, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quinn, Phil Thompson, Laura Lancers, Mo Gravick, Colin Anderson.
There we go. You can also follow us on Twitter @GuitarNerds, on Instagram @GuitarNerds. Go to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum, where you can join in with the episode by sending you questions, chatting to all of us guitar nerds, offering to send us Zoom 505s, which is something that I'm looking very much forward to receiving. And you should also go to YouTube, youtube.com/GuitarNerdsVideos.
There is the vlog of our time in Milan.
There is.
Oh, is now up there.
Very well received. I think some excellent camera work by me, some good vlogging skills.
I liked how your video was exactly the same as Mary Spender's video.
Yeah, but I've
literally
sort of
the
first.
Same things happen at the same point in the video.
Has got me in it. Oh yeah, it has actually.
Yeah, it does.
They're both good, but mine's better because it's got more me.
Mm. There's an equal amount of me.
Yeah, shame.
Should too be, much, no, if anything.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for listening this week. Do join us over on the Patreon episode, patreon.com/guitar nerds. See you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Shalom.